It comes up about this time every 4 years. Questions over whether the Office of Management and Budget is organized in the best way to help the government deliver. You hear periodic calls for going back to having a budget bureau or boosting the M in OMB. For some ideas of what the next president can do with that crowd in the big gray pile next to the White House, Mallory Bard-Bowman, Research Director at the Partnership for Public Service. And Mallory, brand new report that you've put out that really has a lot of ideas for OMB.
Really excited to talk with you about OMB this morning. OMB is a tiny office. In some ways, it's the best kept secret in Washington. You have some of the smartest people out there. And OMB really has some large responsibilities. It really sits at the center of government and has the opportunity to coordinate across government. So we were really excited to look at this institution in a constructive way.
And the bottom line, do you still feel that it should be an OMB? Or should there be separate management bureaus and budget bureaus, as in days of old?
Absolutely. So I think the partnership brought together more than 70 different experts, including current and former OMB officials, four former directors, agency leaders, congressional staff, and a few former members of the West Wing staff. And what we really found consensus around is, first of all, OMB is a tiny agency with huge and unique responsibilities. When you think about OMB, we describe the partnership a lot as an organization that punches above its own weight, and I think OMB is very much in the same category. You're talking about an agency with only about 500 people, and that number has dwindled in recent years. And also, when you're the president, stuff's going to happen, whether it's dealing with threats we already know about, such as Zika, or dealing with the next Hurricane Katrina, Rita, or September 11th. The president will need to rely on OMB to be able to address critical challenges and be able to leverage the resources across government. We spoke, I'm thinking about a conversation we had with Rafael Boras, who was over at the Department of Homeland Security. And what he was talking about is during his time at DHS, that there was really no issue that didn't cross organizational lines. And he found OMB very helpful at bringing organizations together and helping them see the common threads of what they need to do. He even went as far as saying he wished OMB was more involved in that bringing together, that convening.
All right, so there's a lot of praise there, and it punches above its weight. So what needs to change then, if anything?
Sure. So the first thing we talk about in the report is implementation. My grandpa used to have a saying of, you did good. And OMB a lot of times sort of manages by airdrop through executive orders or other types of things. We were looking at different numbers. The Obama administration alone issued 269 executive orders as of September 2016. And that's even less than the George W. Bush administration, which issued 294 executive orders during that same amount of time. And not that OMB should be in the implementation role, and actively it shouldn't be. There's no way that OMB has the capacity to do that. But really looking at what it is going to take to implement at the agency level and making sure that the agency staff are ready to do that. Other things that we found and we talked with folks about was really opening lines of communication between OMB and the Congress, making sure that the budget process that OMB does so well is really well coordinated with the appropriation needs of the Congress, and making sure that it doesn't end up just being, an exercise for the point of exercise, that it really is towards a key outcome. And the third, I would say, that the partnership highlights in this report is intergovernmental relations. So I talked earlier about intergovernmental. Here I'm talking about intragovernmental. So looking at the federal, state, local, when you look at a lot of critical issues, think about the water issue in Flint, Michigan, it really involves the federal government working well with states and localities. It does that a lot of times through grant programs. It does it through any number of different functions. And OMB is really well poised to be the facilitator and the implementer at that intragovernmental level.
We're speaking with Mallory Bard-Bowman, Research Director at the Partnership for Public Service. And something you didn't mention that I wanted to ask you about is when it comes to budget preparation time or evaluation of programs, this kind of thing, a lot of people get tasked to OMB So its virtual staff can swell quite large at budget time, and then people go back to their own agencies. That seems like an efficient model for getting specific tasks done. Does the report address that particular aspect of OMB?
We do. And actually, again, what you're highlighting something really interesting, Tom. So this model of details and rotations around government is a really important model. Sometimes you find the folks within OMB know more about these agencies than almost anybody, you know, second none to the people who have been in the agencies. And so when you create a model of folks rotating around government, whether it's coming into OMB for a detail or folks coming out of OMB into the agencies for a detail, there really is a lot of potential there to maximize resources, make sure that folks have a chance to walk in each other's shoes for a while, and also supplement each other's resources. The reality in Washington is that we're not going to be dealing with huge budgets or large numbers of staff increases anytime in the near future. And details and rotations are a great way to supplement ongoing staff.
And how is the mix of patronage jobs versus career jobs at OMB? Because people sometimes forget that there are career jobs at OMB, and it seems like those people would be a really important transitional and continuity measure, even though it can be a very highly politicized place, OMB, because it is the president's own kind of operating cabinet.
You know, that's a really good point, Tom. The Partnership for Public Service talked to former OMB leaders, and we said, what is the one thing you wish you knew when you came in? And the number two lesson that they said after start developing the president's management agenda immediately is don't waste the OMB career staff. As I had said to you earlier, the OMB staff is some of the smartest, best people in government. We heard that again and again and again. And a lot of times the incoming political leadership makes the error of assuming that the career staff is beholden in some way to the prior president. These are folks who are totally apolitical, and they know how to get things done in government. And the big difference is whether, you know, the incoming administration learns that on day one or on day 200. And the sooner the incoming administration can learn that and really leverage this robust data source, robust, you know, source of expertise within government, the better.
But the career people still can't go to the White House mess, though, can they?
I don't think so. And actually, it's interesting with OMB, you have a geographic breakdown, too. You have what they call the gray building and the red building. If you drive up 17th Street, you see the red building and the gray building. And
they're
the
both
building,
ugly, but from different eras.
I think the gray building's pretty nice. But it, you have the politicals in the gray building and the red building as the career staff. So you do literally have to cross the street, but I think folks will find that that's a street worth crossing.
And no symbolism in the fact that the old gray building is in the Second Empire style. Mallory Barg-Bowman is research director at the Partnership for Public Service. As always, thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Tom.
And we'll post that report. It's only 44 pages. It's called From Decision to Results, along with this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.